here. Good to have you with us, brothers, sisters, like teenagers and young families. We've had a pleasure, and I think there's a few visitors online as well, so yeah, you're most welcome to be tuned in, and great to have you with us this morning. For those visiting and haven't heard me speak, I'll let you in on a few of my foibles. The first one you kind of worked out already is I'm a bit of a tricky person. Normally a bit of left hand to hold on to, so it makes my pushing a little bit less, but that's not the first one actually. I don't generally speak for a long time, so stay focused and otherwise you'll miss it. And secondly, probably more importantly, whenever I write a talk, it's almost if I'm looking in the mirror when I'm doing it, so I'm generally speaking to myself first and foremost before them. I'm trying to exhort my fellow brothers and sisters. Lastly, on this one, it's got nothing to do with our current situation that we find ourselves in. I'm not going to refer to COVID-19, but it is a message about a tough subject, which is death, really. Was part of it anyway. So this excerpt was kind of the framework and the bones of it. Started way back in February, early March, so just to fill you in on that one. So it's I entitled it as it's about your epitaph. So what is inscribed and written on your tombstone? And of course we don't have a tombstone yet if we're here because we're still alive, but if we were not to be, what would be inscribed on it? So if I looked around with the help of Google, I found some snippets of gravestones that I just shared with you. The Antarctic explorer, Ernest Shackleton, on his grave had an inscription from Robert Browning, which was a famous poet. And it says, "I hold that a man should strive to the uttermost for his life's death price." So that has some meaning and bearing on to us in a different way. Frank Sinatra, "The best is yet to come." Robert Frost, "I had a lover's quarrel with the world." A friend of mine who passed away, he said on his, "I'm here for a good time, not a long time." But finally, this one kind of stood out for me, this Latin saying, and that I'm going to attempt to actually say it in Latin, but just the actual words. Which I'll probably get that wrong, but it says "per transiet beneficiendo." I said definitely got that wrong. Which simply means, in English, "he went about doing good." And incidentally, this is straight out of Acts chapter 10, and that's speaking of Jesus and how he went about his ministry. So yeah, he went about doing good. It's not a bad one to have.
Do I sit here?
So,
no, because I can look at it.
Sorry, for the youngsters and sisters and unlearned might not quite know what that means, but that means quite simply death. So, they say he's brown bread, he's dead. So, life to death is a natural progression for us, and that quite simply is sad. But unfortunately, we're all at some point in our lives going to dwell on our mortality. And with it, the emotional, brutal effect of life that we're on a straight line drag race to the finish line. And as a young man, I didn't have a care in the world, and attempting walk speed to the finish line seemed completely natural. At all cost, I wanted to win the race, and that seemed to me the most original and very best plan laid out ever. As an older version of that man, I started to realise that I'm not sure if this is a race I want to finish first, if at all. So I find myself in the inevitable position that I can't be disqualified, so the race must be completed regardless of my change of heart and change of attitude. So as I'm inching my way closer to the happy hunting ground, a fire is passed around politely and agrees how to write an epitaph. So there's about five or six steps to this process. Step one is consider the core principles, beliefs, and values of the person you're writing against. So principles. Conservative by nature, mixed with a good dose of how to bend the rule mentality. Beliefs. That Jesus was the Son of God and died on a cross, whose blood bled onward like the blood painted on the doorframe, so that the angel of death would pass by, and therefore provided a pathway and a promise of hope for eternal life in the kingdom based on the sacrifice. And values,
I just finished
to
it.
Try and help others as best he could and place them before his own selfish nature. Now, step one. A bit of thinking to do to narrow those words down to get on that gravestone. Step two is take your time. And as you get older, the bigger the tombstone gets, because there's so much more to write. It's not an easy task. And one would rely on that if I only had more time, which is ironic. Step three, brainstorm ideas with family, which it would be easy because all of my family would agree with step one and my principles and beliefs and values. Wouldn't they? They might not. Step four, consider who you want to speak to. Well, apart from the people wandering through the graveyard who stumble upon your resting place, then I guess the message is to anyone in the world, even though graveyards are generally lonely places. I guess the message that intrigues you is most likely to be read and reread by your family and uncles. Step five, search for inspiration. So you have the knowledge and experience of a lifetime and you've witnessed all these things, this would be easy. But what message, what imprint, what mark do you leave as your passing final word? And finally, step six, and it says, choose a message that stands the test of time. So the paradox in life is I would think to a tattoo. Not that I have a tattoo, but once seemed a brilliant idea and an appropriate inscription may come back to bite you, because as in life, circumstances and your heart can change. And suddenly the message that you thought that should be written seems irrelevant. So choose your words wisely and have the ability to adapt as you go through life. So now you've got this knowledge of how to write one, please feel free to write your own while you're still alive and kicking. The presiding brother has already told me his, but I won't share that. I think he's told everyone that one, actually. And I've considered my own one, and it might be along these lines. Simply, brutally, certainly didn't measure up to Jesus' example, but kept on trying every day to change. Hebrews chapter 9, and reading from verse 23, says, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. So as we ponder these things, what is our legacy? You could have almost called this exhort the Google exhort, because it's great, www of sorts. Even though I found out just recently that you don't really need to have to put the www in anymore, so that's saved me some time. But those three W's are the what, the why, and the who. And think about that as you're thinking of what is going to be written on your tombstone, the what, why, and who. So let's look at some examples that are provided to us in this world and in God's Word, the Bible. From the British Isles, Princess Diana. Love by the nation, and one for the populist vote amongst the common folk. A lot of work in Africa for starvation and poverty. Seem to be kind and loving. Ndot, 31st of August, actually, 1997. And it's one of those things that everyone likes to see as, I know where I was when that happened. From the United States, if I remember this one, he went alive anyway, to lead. This was Abraham Lincoln. He led the nation through its greatest moral, constitutional, and political crisis in the American Civil War. Went about abolishing slavery, strengthened the federal government, and modernized the US economy. Death by assassination, 14th of April, 1865. Closer to home, good old New Zealand, Colin Pine Tree Meads. And Andrew was a great rugby player, an icon so much that they immortalised him with a statue in his hometown of Tinkalooty. I met him once, only by chance, at a charity function in 2004, I think it was. And I was talking to his wife and him at this auction, and to be honest, they looked like they prefer to be somewhere else, anywhere else but there. They got their wish, they're also brown bred. Sir Peter Blake, 1989-1990, Whitbread round the world race. He had his country to successive victories in the America's Cup. And unfortunately got gruff and grumpy one day on a river in a foreign land, and subsequently got shot, and now he's dead. Jonah Lomu, the one man that thought about professional rugby globally. I think he's the only rugby player that had the EA Sports game named after him, made for PlayStation. But like he and some of his other famous Hurricanes rugby teammates found out, they were mere mortals, and they died, young. And as we read in Timothy this morning, for we brought nothing into the world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. What are God's examples? Well, we've read some of them this morning. Abraham. Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he was received as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. So he knew the who, because God had instructed him, but as to the where and the why, maybe not so clear. But he did just that by being faithful. But he didn't trust that God had his back. He took matters into his own hands, lying to Abimelech about his wife Sarai, being his sister, because he couldn't at the point in time see the wood for the trees. That kind of sounds quite familiar to us in our daily lives. We constantly take matters into our own hands. And this is the feeling when we don't acknowledge God working in our lives. It's not until hindsight and looking back at that situation we can appraise it for what it is and realise where we should always be seeking God's help. Moses, verse 24, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. And in 29, by faith, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land. But he also killed an Egyptian in him. He refused God at first because he was not eloquent and was slow of speech. And finally, as we read in Numbers, when Israel cried out for water, Moses, instead of speaking to the rock as God had instructed him, he struck it twice. So again, a man taking matters into his own hands. And for that, he did not enter the promised land. He got to look at it, which was really rubbing his nose in it. In Deuteronomy 34, it says this, then Moses went up to the plains of Moab to the Mount Nebo, which is across from Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah as far as the Western Sea, the south and the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of conquest of Pharazoah. And the Lord said to him, this is the land of which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over it. Justice served them for not trusting in God, and his tombstone would have been a mixed bag, which I've read here in Deuteronomy. But like in Hebrews we read this morning, it also mentions Moses and his faith five times. And in the end of his days, and we read in Deuteronomy chapter 34, it says quite simply, but since then there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses, and the Lord knew face to face. David, a shepherd boy that became a king, had everything at his feet, slipped up a couple of times, family hate and shoot, and in Hebrews he only gets a slight mention alongside Samuel. But he will live on in their memories as a great king, but he also had his faults. There are many more to names, and ones that may have meant something more to you personally in your life's journey to date. Neil Armstrong, Tom Tadner, Sir Edmund Hillary, Ira Lockyer, Nelson Mandela, Lee Mellors. The same goes for God's word, as there are many, many more listed in just one chapter of Hebrews. And what shall I say for that? The time would fail me to tell of all the people of Gideon and Barak and Samson. And after all these things, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from it. And how we remember the people in our personal lives that have passed away, as each of us have probably suffered loss along the way at some point. When we finally remember that grandparent who had some quirky ways, and then getting the joy from retelling those tall tales to our children. Often we dwell on the good stuff, and then pass over and glaze over the bad. Although it doesn't stop us remembering the not so good stuff, and in some ways by remembering it we try and avoid repeating some of those seemingly mistakes that they have made. So what is our legacy and what do we leave behind? Our family is an obvious choice, and these are the ones most likely to visit you in your final resting place, so it's important to imprint on them your values and beliefs, if they may carry them on. Now then, with the time that we have remaining, and however much we're limited to, what would you like to change? What would you like to differentiate yourself from the person you are right now to the person you're going to be tomorrow? What are you going to look to change? Each person here, has a certain set of skills. Each skill is different and unique from one to the next. And sometimes these skills are lying dormant, where they're buried beneath shyness. But it's times like this where let's set those skills loose and let them shine. And what did Jesus leave behind? Hebrews 9:11-15 says this, but Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place, once for all having obtained eternal redemption. For of the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer, sprinkled the unclean, sanctified for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God? So, if anything I've said sounds familiar to you, then what happens when your plan is interrupted by the sudden of death? You have all the time in the world to ponder on the nice things that you imagine spoken of your burial. the comforting words, the asparagus rolls, and the generic chit-chat. But sorry, it was an unforeseen and you got caught short. So, in the split second before you shuffle off the board of life, knowing you cannot influence that stone writing anymore, it is done for all the world to see. So, the big questions arrive, and they're tentative and pensive, ones full of the unknown. What is written? Is it that you had a sound temperament, were blameless and gentle, not quarrelsome? Did we have a stable household, and did we apply our best ability and spirit to ensure it ran well? Or is it something else? This is current, the here and now, today at 10:45 on Sunday the 24th of May in the year 2020. So now, if you had more time and you knew what was on the horizon of this Christmas time, what would you have written differently? What is written is probably the opposite of the above, but that's personal, that's between you and between God. In hindsight, and the way we look at ourselves, we tell ourselves every day the things we know we need to change. And it's not rocket science. Why do you think we ask for forgiveness for the same, or if not similar sins, most days in the week? What did your family, your friends, your brothers and sisters write? They'd be nice and kind and certainly not brutal. But that's what death is, brutal. And for us, we stood up to that by being baptized. So we are our biggest critics, and by deep brutal, we keep ourselves honest. And who did God write about? That's a kind heart, but certainly didn't measure up to my ideal. However, showed some characteristics that I think we could have worked with, only if we had more time. My beloved son will continue to help them further if they simply stay the course. Listen to my message, which is there as an example, and knowing that they're never going to be perfect. The art of inscribing change. You can change right now, and tomorrow, and the next day. A cup inscriber, like a trophy cup inscriber, starts before the full-time whistle. Before the game has even finished, before the race has even been run and finished. And it stood out to me, I think it was the 2015 Rugby World Cup. The cameras panned over to a guy inscribing, you know, what he was writing. But he seemed to know there was a foregone conclusion that the All Blacks were going to win that game, so he started out describing their team name on that cup. And in our duty, this is God. He already knows what is written. No one sort of knows what could be written at any given point in time, because he is the author and finisher of our faith. Chief cornerstone was his son, and he wrote, "As at the start of his life, this is my son, in whom I am well pleased, and it would not have changed throughout his life." So I had the benefit of writing this, so I'm going to put these questions up. I've been thinking about it for about 3 months. So I just want to think about them. Not a tombstone. The why, so it's written in that particular way, and why is that? The who? Who wrote it? And finally, the important one, because it's what has been written about you, and more importantly than that, what did God write? These three questions are all intertwined, so how eager are we to change what is written if we don't like it? And over the course of the coming weeks and days, try and do the simple exercise. Tuck them away, don't have to show them to anyone. As I said, that's between you and God. this exercise applies to all of us, and it's not just a once a year New Year's resolution type activity. For the teenagers, if you're still listening, these questions, although they look like quite simple words at a passing glance, are in fact very powerful to God's desired outcome for us. They're independent in your choice, but try and prayerfully share, would be my advice. Share with prayer. I didn't speak for a bit too long. To close then, and speaking of Jesus Christ and the sacrifice that he made with obedience, because he knew it needed to be done, although even praying in Gethsemane at the end, he asked that question three times. Matthew 26, it says, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful even to death. Stay here and watch with me. O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." A second time he went and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done." And he went again, away again the third time, and he prayed, then saying the same words. Finishing up then in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 23. "Therefore it was necessary that the copies of the things in heaven should be purified with these. But the heavenly things themselves were pure sacrifice than these. For Christ has not entered the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Not that he should offer himself often, as the high priest enters the most holy place every year with the blood of another. He then would have had to suffer often since the foundation of the world. But now, once at the end of the ages, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And as it is appointed for me to die once, but after this the judgment, so Christ was offered once to bear the sins of men. To those who eagerly wait for him, he will appear a second time, apart from sin, for salvation." Thank you.